For those of you who were not raised in the church, the book of Exodus is a really big deal. It's the story of a group of people, the Hebrews, who were enslaved. And in the last 50 years, this book has been used, well, even before that, during the civil rights movement. Black theology came from this book. Latin America looked to this book to help the peasants who were oppressed. Feminist theology came from this book. Gay liberation came from this book. This is a big deal. In Genesis, towards the end, we hear the story of a boy whose name was Joseph. He was cocky, and I would not have liked him. He told his brothers that one day I'm going to rule over you. And his brothers kind of took offense. In fact, they sold him into slavery. And as the story goes, he became kind of a big deal in the eyes of Pharaoh. He rose to power, and there was a famine. And his brothers had to come to him for food. There's this beautiful scene where he reveals who he is to his brothers and he forgives them. And he tells the Pharaoh the stories that have transpired. And the Pharaoh says, invite your family to Egypt. Well, they come and there's a lot of them. It's worse than my family. There's lots of them. And they reproduce, and they reproduce, and they reproduce. And then Exodus starts out with this lineage. But it turns on this really important scripture. There arose a king of Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he looked around and saw all these foreigners and got scared. The snotty academic word for it is xenophobia. Fear of the stranger. And he says to everyone, look at all of these Hebrews. If a war transpired, they could take the side of our opponents and they could take us down. So he deals harshly with the Hebrews. He decides to enslave them. And he tells the midwives, if there is a Hebrew girl, let her live. But if there is a boy, you are supposed to kill him. Well, the midwives feared God, and they didn't do it. But the Pharaoh said, any boy who is born, he has got to die. And there was a woman, and she had a little boy. And she loved her little boy. And she didn't want him to die. So she makes this little ark for him and puts it in the Nile and tells his sister, follow and see what happens to my little boy. As it turns out, Presbyterians would call this providence, the Pharaoh's sister finds this ark and raises the child as her own. Moses understands who he is, and he sees an Egyptian hurting a Hebrew, and he kills the Egyptian. He's a killer, and the Pharaoh wants to kill him. So he runs away in the wilderness. He's in the wilderness, and this is where the story begins. Listen for the word of God, but allow this familiar and really, really, really uncomfortable text to find you individually and corporately where you are on the journey. Listen for the word of our God. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And there, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, and yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not being burned up. Then God saw that Moses had turned aside. And God called to Moses out of the bush, saying, Moses, Moses. And he said, Hineni, hear my, behold me. And then he said, come no closer, and remove your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy and sacred ground. And God said further, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look upon God. Then the Lord said, I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on the account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their suffering, and I have come down to deliver them from the land of Egypt and to bring them out of that land to a good land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelites have come to me, and I have seen how the Egyptians have oppressed them. So I come, and I send you to go to Pharaoh to bring them out of the land of Egypt. But Moses said, who am I that you would call me to go to the Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be a sign that it is for you that I have sent you. When I have brought the people out of the land of Egypt, you shall worship God upon this mountain. But Moses said to God, if I go to the people of Israel, the Israelites, they're going to say to me, the God of your ancestors sent you. And they will ask me, what is this God's name? And what will I say to them then? And God said to Moses, I will be who I will be. And God said further, thus you will say to the Israelites, I am has sent me. God said to Moses, thus you will tell the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham and Sarah, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me. And this will be my name, and this will be my title for all generations. This is the word of life. Thanks be to God. This is the first time a calling is written in the canon in the Bible. But there's kind of a formula that you can follow when someone is being called. There's usually a theophany, which is a snotty academic word for the presence of God. The call goes out. There's resistance. And then there's assurance. And the person is being sent forth. This is what I know about callings. God never calls us to do something that God does not equip us to do. And I know this personally. I knew at the age of 5 I was going to stand in the pulpit. I would find a dead bird and I would bring the girl across the street and my little brother and my dog and we would do funerals. I dressed my little brother up like a girl, and I'd get a little kid, and I'd do the weddings. But when it came time to go to seminary, I couldn't do it. I said, God, I can't go to seminary. I'm gay. I can't. There is no possible way I can do this. So I hid for a while. I hid being a youth director. And then I ran to the theater and did a master's in theater. And I thought I could stay in the theater. But I couldn't sleep. And I couldn't eat. And I was walking the streets at night. And I was exhausted. For a decade, I ran from this calling with all my heart and all my mind. And so I remember it was 4:30 in the morning. I sat down and I said, I give up. There's no possible way I will ever get into a seminary, not with my grades. There's no possible way that the Presbyterian Church is going to ordain me. But I made this commitment. I will go where you want me to go. I will say what you want me to say. I will do what you want me to do. Just provide for my needs and make it an interesting journey. That last part I probably should have left out. I completely should have left it out. I applied to one seminary, a prestigious Presbyterian seminary. No possible way I could get in. I was accepted, given tons and tons of scholarships, was ordained, and then, to prove the point, my first job outside of after I graduated from seminary, and I passed my 5 ordination exams the first time, my first job was moving from a city of 900,000 people to a town of 1,200 people, teaching world religions in the Appalachian By God Mountains in eastern Kentucky, where everyone said to me, "You ain't from around here, are you?" And at times I would say, "No." She's like, "Go, no." There, I met a couple and they were Baha'is. It's a religion that accepts all religions, but they have their own prophet. And the father was the first stay-at-home dad I'd ever met. And he was homeschooling his 4-year-old girl. The mom was an attorney. And they would invite people to their homes to do things, and you know, then they would invite their friends. So they had a woman from London who came, and she made all this food and did a high tea. So we all went, and then in the middle of it, I thought, Force, you are having high tea with the woman from London in the home of Baha'is in the Appalachian By God Mountains. Clearly, God has taken care of make it interesting. I don't know if you've ever sensed that. Calling to do something bigger than yourself. There's always this sense of, I can't do this, God. That's for them. That's for Dr. King. That's for Mother Teresa of Calcutta. Not for me. But God always gives us an outfit, one size too big, and says, you're going to grow into it, and I'll provide for you, and I will be with you. I will be with you. There was a woman in one of my congregations, and growing up, her dad was a physician. She always wanted to go to medical school, but never thought she could. She got married, and it was a horrible marriage. She finally got out of it, and then she told me that partially because of my charge and benediction, she had signed up in her 30s to go to medical school. Today, she's a pediatrician. You're never too old to do what God calls you to do. You're never too young, too fat, too skinny. Never. And I tell you this because I want you to think about it individually. But I want us to think about it corporately. We're asking the question, who is God calling us to be as a church? And this requires that we spend some time in silence listening. Because this is what usually happens in like meetings in the church. We say, oh dear God, please be with us and guide this meeting and show us how you want things to do. And then we do whatever we want. We can't do that this time. We can't. We can't afford to. This is your church. Who is God calling you to be? What impossible thing is this shrub that's on fire calling you to be? God has several more conversations with Moses. In fact, there are 13 altogether. In Hebrew, the word, this is going to show you what a dork I am. In Hebrew, the word for bush means sine, is sine. Later, Moses is called back with the people to the mountain of Sinai. It's a play on words. They're great storytellers. But what is the burning bush that's in your heart? What is the place where God is calling you to lean into the discomfort? Because I'll tell you this, from personal experience and from experiences of hundreds and thousands of other people, the I can't, I'm good enough, I'm not good enough, it won't work. It just doesn't work. I think God is calling this church to be a profound voice in this community and in this state and in the world. I think you can have world-reaching effects. Have to dedicate ourselves. Have to pull ourselves together with each other. We have to listen until we've listened. And when God calls us, may our response resoundingly be, here I am, Lord. Send me. Think about it.